Hey guys, it's your host Julian. This week I'm sitting down with Carol Wyatt, art director of the Hanro Pilot 24 Hours to Live. I want to give a special shout out to all the patrons that help support this podcast. Bill, Brent, Brittany, Eight-Legged Bird, Jacob, and Semantics. Thank you all so much for your support. It truly means a lot. If you want to become a member of our Patreon channel to help support this channel and get all of these episodes early and ad-free, follow the link below and sign up today. Now, let's get to my chat with Carol. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to What's My Podcast. I'm your host Julian. Today I'm joined by Carol. Carol, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Welcome.
Oh, thank you. You know, happy like I said, here. Oh, I'm happy to have you because what I love a lot is Hey Arnold. And Craig dropped your name a couple times, you know, during the Urban Legends episode. By the time this one releases, that episode will be out. But he said that you and Tuck were such a huge part on why the pilot is amazing, why it looked beautiful, why it is everlasting, why it is still one of the strongest pilots I myself have ever seen. I'm a little biased because this is my favorite show, you know, one of my favorite shows, this and King of the Hill, two favorite shows of all time growing up. But I would love to know, man, how do you get to work with Craig? How do you get on the Hey Arnold pilot? And how does Carol come to be damn near at that time the princess of pilots?
I did work on a lot of pilots. Yeah. Well, we were at Klasky Csupo, actually, because I was on The Simpsons, and Pee-wee Herman, Pee-wee's Playhouse had ended, and a lot of those guys came over to Klasky Csupo, and they were doing their own projects, or Gabor Csupo was having them do pilots, or, you know, small independent things, or commercials, or, you know, and so in between seasons, and even freelance, I would work on whatever else Gabor had there, and when I heard, I was a big fan of like everything Pee-wee. So mm-hmm. Penny, the Penny cartoons, stop motion, which is what Craig used to do. I was a huge fan. So when I heard he was in the building, I was like, where's Craig Bartlett? I want to meet Craig Bartlett. So I went and found him and just went right up to his desk. And I was like, hey, I'm Carol Wyatt. I'm a huge fan of Penny. And he had on his desk, he had all the little pieces from Penny. And he was showing them, and he was so happy to talk to me about it and tell me everything about stop motion and what he was doing. So that's kind of how we met. And then we just hit it off. We became really good friends right away. And we would talk to each other at the studio. And, you know, I respected his talent. He respected my talent. So when he was ready to do Hey Arnold, he asked me to art direct. And that was awesome. I was like, yeah. So we pretty much worked together, like side by side sometimes, just designing. He would give me a lot of designs and then I would paint them or tweak them, or we developed this style. It was mostly Craig though. It was all his ideas, yeah. And me just kind of trying to make it look different and new. And, you know, we invented kind of this style of, it's a gouache underpainting with colored pencil on top. And that was the style. And then also colored the characters and just kind of created the world.
Now, what I love, and I told you this before we hit record, I love world building. I love backgrounds. It's my favorite part of animation. I get lost in what you guys do when it's big shots. And we'll talk about the my favorite scene, the entire pilot, shortly. I already told you that part. But I love just watching, because these characters come and go on the screen, right? And it's cool to just sit there and look at what's going on in the world that they're walking around in. Because I myself, I'll walk around. I love seeing what somebody's walking up on the sidewalk. Are they listening to something? Are they talking to somebody? What are they doing? So I love that about animation as well. When you guys are developing this, first off, are you guys, whenever you flush out ideas, you're flushing out a world, and you said it was, you said you're painting and then overlays with pencils. Are mm-hmm. you guys doing storyboard layouts and this is how you're coming up with it? Are you guys doing dry erase boards? I mean, what are you guys doing? Canvas and paint?
Yeah, no. We didn't use computers yet. So, yeah. I mean, we were using the computers on The Simpsons, but only for color. And so that hadn't come to happen yet mm-hmm. in the animation. So, yeah, everything. I painted in gouache anyway. So that was just kind of how I did backgrounds and did most like development work when I was doing development, like on Foster's and, you know, other shows. So, yeah, but no, he would design things. He already had kind of a lot of character stuff because he did the stop motion first. Mm-hmm. So he already had ideas of how he wanted it to look. And had an environment and the part of the city he wanted it to be in. And no, we would draw. There weren't storyboards yet. No storyboards
No.
yet. This is way before. When you're doing development, it's so fun because you are literally concepting. So you're just coming up with ideas. Some of them are bad too. Like some of them suck and you toss them and then you do some drawings are terrible. And you're just kind of throwing stuff out there and see what sticks, you know? And he was really easy to work with because, well, we just get along really well. We have a lot of fun. And we just think similarly in terms of design and color and, you know, the world that, but it was very personal to Craig, you know, where he wanted this city and how he wanted it to look. And so he would do some rough designs and then I would kind of clean them up and they were quirky. They were quirky
Yeah.
looking, but their own style. You know, the whole goal was to make it its own show, to make it look different from everything else.
So
So,
when you're saying there is some bad drawings in there, does any one stick out from this pilot in particular that you know just like shit, that design didn't work?
I told you before this, you know, with the dream sequence you're talking about
Yeah.
in the pilot. I mean, when I
The best
drew
scene in the
that.
whole show, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, the best part of the pilot is the dream sequence for me.
So the dream sequence, I remember doing that and I think because I came off The Simpsons and we did these like perfect cities with blocks and perfect perspective and everything. I'm like, this dream sequence, I'm just going to make it funky, you know, funky city. And so I did. And I was so used to doing whatever I wanted. I thought, he'll love it. And of course, he goes, that doesn't look like a city. But we used it. So, you know. He went with it, you know. You know, I don't think he used it for the series, but he did use it. There was another one in Arnold's room because I added a lot to his room. And one of the, you know, I told you I was adding like the 50s pattern rug and the little alien wallpaper. You know, I added those. I added just a lot of design stuff and weird plants and. He wanted to have like a specific plant in the room, and I drew it, and it kind of looked like it, but not really. It was funky, you know?
Yeah.
And he's like, I guess that's a Venus flytrap. But this was how we got along. I mean, I never took offense. I was always like, well, do you want it? Do you not, you know? Because I'm easy to work with. I'm like, you know, if you want me to change it, I'll change it. But he never kind of changed these things. He just left them. So I guess he loved them.
Hey, that's a win. Win is a win.
Yeah, but not everything you do is perfect. And sometimes you got to take those risks and see what people love. Some of the people love some of the things I did, and some of the people don't get some of the things I did. So you just go with it and see what happens.
So something I wanted to circle back to, you know, when I had Craig and Jim on, the show is synonymous with the music and vice versa. I can't have one without hearing it. I can't hear it without seeing it, right? And when I asked Craig and Jim, like, what is it like talking with one another? Because Craig is really big into music, and obviously Jim is the maestro, essentially. So I guess it made it easier because they could both speak the same language. Now you said you're really easy to work with, and you had a lot of fun working with Craig, and Craig was easy to work with too. Did you guys speak the same language almost like him and Jim did? You guys were coming at it from two different aspects.
It was easy. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was one of the easiest jobs. Yeah. In terms of design. Yeah.
Was there anything that you wanted to get in? I know this is a long time ago, so I apologize for asking this question.
It's
But
hard to remember.
was there anything that you wanted to get in that you couldn't get in? Does anything come to mind?
You know, we didn't have much time. So, like in the city, you know, where he lives, that front street, when we were designing the street, I remember Craig asked, you know, because when we were working on series, you add a lot of details. You'll add, like, you know, specific market and, you know, because they become parts of the script and parts of the environment that you end up using forever. So, you know, he really wanted some more details, like a meat market and this and that. And we didn't really have time to like come up with quirky names, you know, where like on a series, you actually spend time naming a building or naming a store. And so that was kind of a bummer that like there just wasn't enough time. Like I drew it, painted it, and I thought it was going to go into revisions. Instead, it was just used. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess we're just using this and it's not going to be rehashed or reworked. And, you know, I was very used to that on The Simpsons, like redo things 500 times. But yeah, it was, you know, you wanted to add more, but in the series, they ended up adding a lot more. So they had the time and the budget and the people, the staff. This was just me and Craig at first. And then, you know, little by little, it got bigger, but hardly. It was not big. It was a tiny crew.
You remember how long you guys had to flesh out this pilot?
Not long. That's all I remember.
Yeah.
I don't remember. But when you work on pilots, you tend to do, or back then, you do everything. So even if you're not an art director, you're still, if you're just a one of the designers, you're still working on everything in the show because it's an all hands on deck process, you know, just to get the show kind of developed. And, you know, the whole purpose is to sell it for series. So you're just trying to make it look really good and sell the story. You know, make sure the story comes across, the jokes, the music, you
Yeah.
know. Yeah.
Like I said, it's a fun pilot. And ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't watched this one, there will be a link below. So just click it and watch it and then come back to this video. Like I told you, I won't get like super technical, or not even super technical, because I don't know you guys' speak. Like I'm starting to learn more phrases and more words and within the animation. So I'm coming at it from just a fan's perspective. Like I said, I love this pilot. I hadn't seen it in quite some time. I actually forgot about this. Once you start watching it, everything kind of starts flooding back. But the nuances of things, that's what I forgot the most of, you know. And what I love about this, and there might have a name for it, but anytime there was a shot of like the kids, specifically Arnold, after he beams Harold with the baseball, right? He's
Right.
nervous. Obviously, we've all had that bully, you know, as a kid. You know, you're worried he's going to beat you up the next day. So you're going home with that sinking feeling the entire time. And there's a couple shots in there in particular where it's like you're a bystander behind Harold and everybody is blue in front of him. And when Arnold is going through, he's really down in the dumps. He's really anxious. He's really scared. And everybody else is blue. Is there a name or a term for a shot like that? Because I love that aesthetic.
There isn't a name for it, but when we're going through and, you know, color is really the emotional story. So you're putting emotion to things when you're adding color or paint and music as well. That's like that gives you the most emotion for the characters. But we don't have a name for it. It's just you go through it and you meticulously go through scene by scene to decide how you want to art direct the thing, how you want everybody, how you want to manipulate everyone's feelings, you know, how do you want people to feel at this moment, you know? So that's all. It was just planned out, you know.
Well, it's a hell of a plan. You know, I want to throw this scene in there as well. I mean, it's not from the same thing, but 101 Dalmatians. There's a scene in there where Sergeant Tibbs is holding the puppies back, and Jasper is in there, and they're getting ready to hit them with the crowbar, and everything goes red behind him. You see the by. So it was just that it had that initial vibe. It reminded me of that 101 Dalmatian scene. Anytime I see a shot like that, that's instantly what I'm taken back to. That's the first time I could see, you know, anger as red, you know, coming through, and blue as anxious or depressed coming through. So it was really cool just seeing that. And like I said, I just forgot about it for the longest time. Whose idea was it to do the it might have been a Tucker, it might have been a Craig thing, but consistently reminding Arnold he's gonna die. Now you're at 16 hours and 17 minutes and 42 seconds. Do you know whose idea that would have been?
Well, probably Craig's. I mean,
Craig's.
he yeah, and the
Yeah.
writer. I mean, no, Craig came up with, I mean, it was his pilot. It was
Yeah.
his idea, his story, his everything. And I know the writers contributed, but he came up with all of it, just like with the design too. I was there doing it, but it was really his brain. we were all interpreting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What part of the show did you enjoy? Obviously, you said you loved designing and putting little niche things in there for Arnold's room. But was there anything else outside of that room that you loved coming up with?
I just love doing the paintings themselves. They were fun to do because you didn't get to be very free back then, you know, with hand painted backgrounds. Things were very tedious and tight, and it was fun to just kind of get loose with it, especially with colored pencils. And it was fun. And yeah, but then teaching that in Korea was difficult.
So I've
turning
I've been
that
waiting.
Into a pipeline.
I've been waiting for this one because that's actually, like I said, that's how you guys came up. Craig had told a story about you and Tuck going over to Seoul, South Korea, right?
Oh, yeah.
Before we get to that story, though, this is something I always love doing. I told you we were going to do this before. What are some of, like, whenever you think of Tuck, is there a story, an emotion, anything fun, or even anything just having like a real life conversation with Tuck? Like, what's something that the fans might not know about Tuck?
He was a great baker. He made the best pies. And he didn't just make pie. Well, he was from, is it Virginia or West Virginia? And I'm from Kentucky, so we would talk about that a lot. But he would
the
just
accent's
take
not
his,
there. The
no,
gone.
No. It got beaten out of me years ago. But yeah. No, he would go, you know, we live in this urban jungle, and he would go up the hills with his dog and collect berries and then come home and bake like blueberry pie or blackberry. He made a lot of blackberry pies, and he was a brilliant cook, and he would just make things. Like, we would go over to his house and he'd be building some kind of a I don't know, like an umbrella thing over his patio. You know, he just kind of would get ideas, and he had a ton of energy, and he would just do things. He was very talented in many areas, but also just super sweet, nice guy.
Yeah. I think he's not too far from where my mom grew up, in that Midwest, or even though it's on the East Coast, that tri-state area of West Virginia, Ohio, and Kentucky. My mom, she still lives out in Gallipolis Ferry, which is like 45 minutes, from Huntington, very, very close to Kentucky as well. So I know the area very well. I know that accent very well, especially when I make my mom mad. That accent comes out real thick.
It does. But if I get mad or I'm around Southerners, it starts to come out. Yeah, because I'm from Louisville. Yeah. Louisville.
So with that being said, one more story about somebody that's no longer here and then we'll transition into the South Korea story. But Steve Vixton, I've gotten to hear a couple stories from, I always pronounce his name incorrectly, Joe Ancelabout. Thank you. I heard one that episode I'll actually never be able to release. My laptop was stolen way back in the day when we first started this podcast. His episode was on it, but he told me some really cool stories about Steve and just what it was like, with the ideas and stories that they would write in the couple seasons that Joe was on. And then Craig told me some really cool ones as well. But when you hear the name Steve, does anything come to mind?
He was sweet. We were friends when we were working in the same building and stuff, but yeah, I didn't see him much after that, but he was really, really nice guy. I believe he was one of the writers that liked to leave to go write. A lot of writers write elsewhere. They'll like go to the track or they'll go to a bar. Yeah. There are a lot of writers like that. They just can't stay in the room, the writer's room, for very long. And I think he was one of those. I think he would go to the track on occasion. So I always remember that. But I don't really have any stories because he was kind of mellow and we would just chat. We would hang out and chat. Yeah. With Joe and Saliba here. He was a really good friend of mine. Still is good friend of mine. Yeah.
Yeah. He when I got to talk to him a few years back, man, he was he just fired stories off like left and right of everything. Guy's got a steel trap for a mind. Just the fact that he could just sit there and remember the stuff like it was yesterday. I was just like, Jesus Christ, I really hope I can hold on to half as much information as I've collected, like this guy has. So thank you for sharing those about Tuck and Stephen. Steve, excuse me. So flash forward, and even though we're going backwards in time here, to South Korea, man. Like I said, Craig said you guys were over there. You guys were like the first wall of defense to make sure that the vision was to stay true. So what was it like taking this pilot and trying to communicate with a country you guys have probably never been to at that point, and trying to make sure that Hey Arnold stayed Hey Arnold?
Well, luckily I had had experience because I was supervisor on The Simpsons. So I had experience dealing with some of the studios in South Korea and Seoul. And so when I went over there, I knew The Simpsons supervisor just happened to share the same room with me and Tuck. And so that was a fun room. But yeah, it was interesting because I've traveled a lot before this. So I had already traveled around the world a lot. So I kind of knew cultures and differences. It wasn't a shock or anything, except for the bathrooms where you had to squat. And like, the communal bathrooms where you had to squat. I was like, this is okay. I don't know who's going to walk in. But and that was in the studio, but the hardest thing probably was not giving direction. A lot of the people there, I mean, they were the nicest people. I actually made friends with a few of the people I worked with while I was there, but they were younger. The older males would not look at me or talk to me, and I had to tell them what to do. So they would turn their back to me, and the interpreter would face me. And I would talk to the interpreter, and then they would tell two older males who were
Jesus.
brilliant painters, and she would tell them my instructions or what to revise or what needed to be done. And yeah, they treated it, they just couldn't handle, I was really young. And so it wasn't just that I was female, it was that I was very young. And they, of course, didn't know my history. Even though I was young, I had a lot of history already. And one time we were working in the room all together, and because I got sick of being in the office, I was like, I want to be in with the
Go to the
painters so I
racetrack
can
and go
just,
to the racetrack.
yeah. I just like, yeah, I couldn't take being separated and then receiving work and having to give notes. I wanted to just go talk to people. So I went to the studio where they were working, and I stayed there for a couple of days and worked with them. And at one point, one of the men who wouldn't talk to me came up to me while I was sitting at my desk, fixing some BGs and working on some backgrounds. And he came up, and he had my comp, like my original painting, and he put it down on the table and saw I signed. Back in the day, we signed everything. We signed our names to all of our artwork, even layouts, drawings, designs, everything. So I signed all my backgrounds, and he pointed to the name and he goes, "This is you?" I was like, "Yeah." And he goes, "Oh." Oh, and all of a sudden there was this respect. It was weird. It was like, I think because I was in the room with them and I was working really hard and they saw me working hard. I wasn't just some foreigner coming in telling people what to do, And I think it just helped, that I sat in the room with them and I was in the trenches with them. So that was a good experience.
That sounds really cool. I mean, it's, I when I was in the Navy for a little while, and I got to do some traveling, and it's a culture shock. Like, I had went to Italy way before the military, not way before, it was a couple years before. But I'd gotten to see a different culture by myself, and then joining the military, you get to see all these different cultures. So it is not so much a culture shock, but it is different being in a different spot, trying to learn their customs, their language, their do's, their don'ts. And trying to assimilate for a little while into theirs. And one thing I noticed was, like, if you tried to do what they do, right? So you go there, you try to speak their language, you're showing them respect, you go there, you eat their food, You don't push it away or, that type of thing. They respect you. It's a little bit earned each time, So hats off to you, man. 'Cause a lot of people, I was out there with a lot of guys and a lot of Navy guys that just like crumbled. They didn't want to do it. They just wanted to speak English. They didn't want to go anywhere and just, they want to eat McDonald's. You know what I mean? So hats off to you for going there.
You have to. I mean, you have to. You have to show people respect. It's, you're in their country. It's just, and they're working for you. It's like you want to show people, that's just a good business model anyway, is to be respectful towards anyone who works for you or is working on your artwork, definitely.
Yeah, you don't ever
you get
want
better
to,
work.
Yeah, you never want, like I've always said this, I've never worked harder for anybody that was an asshole. I've always worked harder for somebody that treated me like a human being and treated me like, like a person, like I'm a valued member. So it goes a long way, ladies and gentlemen. With that being said, how long were you in the industry at that point when you went over to Korea?
Gosh, what was that, mid-90s? I don't remember.
Like 94-ish? I know.
So 94?
Yeah, 94-95-ish.
I started in 87, so not that long, but longer than a lot of people I was working with.
So with that being said, I dropped the thing where you'd worked on a lot of pilots. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want a show made, and wanted to get it serious, Carol damn near brought all of the heavy hitters. Most Mount Rushmore shows, Carol here worked on the pilot. So that's your lucky rabbit's foot right there. With that being said, with all of these different shows you worked on, what was like the hardest part about trying to adapt Craig's art style or his sensibility? Was that difficult?
No, because I've been lucky. I've worked with people who I really click with. And usually when you're hired to develop, it's called development. When you're developing a new show, that was one of my specialties. I was good at coming up with new styles. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people sought me out for that to like, we want to make this different. So let's hire Carol, she'll do something new. And, they would only hire me because they liked my work. So it was pretty easy to get along with these people, and they did respect me and they did kind of love whatever I would come up with, even if it was weird. So I was pretty lucky. But the hardest part, I think, with development is converting your ideas, and they can get really out there, but converting it into a pipeline that works within a budget. That's like the hardest. And you do need experience to know how to do that. So when you're an art director, those are the things that come into play. You're dealing with the network, you're dealing with budget, you're dealing with producers and executive producers. So it's not just Craig. You're also dealing with the fact that, well, we just don't have time for this. How can we simplify this and make it so that 50 people can get this done really quickly? You do have to make plans and organize, and a lot of the job is organization.
How soon into your career? And obviously we're talking about Hey Arnold here, but, in any line of work, you've got hills that you want to die on. Do you remember any of them that you had to put your foot down and say, no, it has to be this way? Because I've heard so many times by Craig, whether it was, a plot point, like the writers would argue like, no, it has to be this. I can't remember the name of the female. It was in the Parents' Day episode. I can't remember the writer, but she was walking back and like pacing before he had even walked into his office. And he goes, "Hey, you okay?" He's like, "We can't do it this way, because if we do it this way, it's not right. It's not real. These characters, so it was just, they would fight for specifics, right? Was there anything that you knew you wanted to fight for Hey Arnold in particular, for this pilot?
Not on Hey Arnold. No. I didn't really have to fight for much. No. On some other shows, yeah, I did, but not on Hey Arnold. Yeah.
Okay. Cause like I said, and I know you said you got to make sure it's on budget, it's on time. Most of the time they want it early and they want it cheaper. You know what I mean? So just trying to make sure you're making everybody happy at that point. With that being said, when you're over at Korea, do you remember how long you were in Korea for?
I think it was a few weeks. I can't remember exactly. It was short. It was very short. Yeah.
Now, what do you think is the, cause obviously you got to work tandem with Tuck during that time.
Yeah, but, that was fun.
what Well, your eyes lit up when you said you're working with Tuck and it was fun. So what was fun about working with Tuck there in Korea?
Oh my gosh. Well, he does like to play a lot of tricks on people.
I've heard.
And I got plenty.
You're a
Yeah, so
recipient.
we shared an office, and like I said, we shared an office with a guy that I just happened to know already, Mike Gerard, who was the supervising director on The Simpsons. And we used to have conversations like all the time because I was supervisor on The Simpsons.
Hey guys, as we take a pause for the cause, I want to let all the loyal listeners out there know that you can get these episodes early and ad-free by signing up for one of our three tiers over on Patreon. Check the link below and consider supporting your favorite animation and pop culture podcast. Now, let's get back to that chat.
So we'd have those late night or early morning conversations. So I shared a room with him as well, and he's very sarcastic and a little crazy, and just like all animators. And Tuck is like a really nice, he was very sweet, very nice, very wholesome guy, but he played horrific tricks on you. So it was unexpected. You never knew what he was going to do. The very first morning we went to work, which I got in late at night and I was totally jet lagged, and I had to be up like 6 hours later and go to work. And so I'm like, I need you to take me there. I don't, you're just looking at all the signs and I don't know where I'm going, how to get there. I don't even know anything. What? And so he spoke a little Korean and he had been there already for a while. And he's like, no, I'll take you on the subway. So we get on the subway. We're going to work. This is the first morning. First morning. And I have had no sleep. And it's like, what time is it for me? I don't even know. And it stops at this stop. And he jumps off. He goes, oh, this is our stop. And I get off. And then he jumps back on and he took off.
Dick.
My first day. And I didn't speak any Korean. I couldn't read any of the signs. And, I don't know how he did it. He managed, he came back. Like, I was just like, fucker, And, but, I've traveled, like I said, I've traveled a lot. So I take things in stride when I'm traveling because it's like, what can you do? And somehow he made, I don't know where he got off, but he made his way back and came and got me. But that was just one. There were many, many of those. There was a really cruel one that he did. And of course, stuff like this would never fly now with the way our politics are nowadays. But back in the 90s, you could get away with doing these kinds of things. We all shared one telephone in our office. It was, old-fashioned phone, had the long cord, so each of us could take it to our desk. And I was closest to the phone. So I ended up picking up the phone a lot, but I didn't even know how to say hello or speak Korean. So I pick up the phone and I go, hi, and they go, oh, something, and they're speaking in Korean really fast. And I just hold it like this and I'd look at Tuck like, what do I do? And he goes, oh, tell him, and he gave me some phrase and I go, how do, and he said it again. I said it on the phone and the guy just goes silent. And I'm like, Tuck, what did you tell me to say? And he goes, and Mike Gerard is sitting there laughing his ass off. And they're like, oh, we told him that you would come by and give him a massage later. And not a regular massage. So, yeah. So, those kinds of, like I said, you can't get away with that kind of stuff now. That's like sexual harassment crap. But it was a blast. It was, I was always one of the guys anyway. But it was so fun working with him. He did teach me some Korean, but of course, I didn't know if any of it was real. I didn't know.
He probably taught you all the bad words because that's what everybody does.
I didn't know. I never knew from one minute to another. But then at the same time, we had a lot of fun. And then, he was also very vulnerable at times because he, a lot of animators, when they're single or whatever, they drink a lot, they go out late at night and stuff. And I'm used to being around those guys. But Tuck was married and had a young child at that time. And you know, the first night they take all of us out and they, you know, they're serving soju and they're trying to get you drunk and they just, you know, that's just how they do things at the studios, you know, overseas. And he leaned to me and he said, can you say that you need me to walk you home because I don't want to stay? And it was just, you know, sweet things like that, you know, where, yeah. Oh, I'm afraid to walk down the street that's completely safe. So can Tuck come with me, you know, like that kind of thing. So he was very sweet, but like, good guy.
It's like whenever your friends would come over, like, hey, you got to go ask my mom if you can stay the night. Cause if I ask, she's going to say no. That's right. Thanks for sharing those stories. I really appreciate it. I love hearing stories about Tuck. I mean, you know, he was such a fascinating person. I mean, you could pick I told you this before too. You could pick a Tuck board out. You could pick a Steve story out through Hey Arnold. It was just, he was on a different level than anybody else, any other board artist, any other director at that time. You know, when Tuck touched something, it was magic. You know, I didn't realize it when I was a kid, but all of my favorite episodes, they all had, you know, one thing in common. And the name Tuck Tucker was almost on every single one of them. You know, it just goes to show you that there's people that are made for a specific profession. And he made it, he hit it, he crushed it, and then he elevated the bar of animation forever, you know? So anytime we get to hear Tuck Tucker stories, I'm forever grateful. So thank you for sharing those. There is one thing, and then we can rotate off of Tuck. But okay. I've always heard of people getting tucked by Tuck Tucker, right? Getting got, if you will.
Yeah.
Did you ever get him back for jumping off the train or anything like that to making this the guy, or you, he told you to tell this guy this one thing? Did you ever get him back?
I didn't get him back, but I got tired of eating the food that he wanted to eat in mm-hmm. Korea, because we kind of were together most of the time, you know, because we worked together, but he was like the person that took me to work every day and took me back and kind of showed me around. So, you know, we passed like in Seoul's amazing. I love Seoul, but they have these cute little tea cafes. I mean, now we have boba and that kind of stuff everywhere, but back then we didn't have anything like that here in the States. And they had all these cute, and they were decorated like Hello Kitty or like, and I am like all about kitsch and color and, you know, and we would pass like the cutest one. And I go, Tuck, we got to go in. We got to go. And he'd be like, Carol, oh my God, no. And you got to go with me. I was like, yep, you're going with me. So I would make him go in and we'd get like sweets or something from there. And of course they were the cutest sweets ever, you know, and all pink. And I was like, yeah, we got to have these. Yeah.
Getting them back one shot at a time.
I go, you have a daughter. You better get used to this.
That's cool. Like I said, thank you for sharing those. So I figure what we can do is we can wrap it up after a few more questions with this pilot, mainly because, like I said, I want to talk a little bit more about that dream sequence. Obviously, you said this was got Craig written all over it, but you're adapting his style and you're trying to put in your style as well, because that's what they hire you. They hire you because they like your artwork. What about this dream sequence? Like when I know this is a long time ago. So when he approaches you, you know, he's obviously having this dream / nightmare. He's going to get beaten up the next day. He's got this consistent reminder of, hey, you're getting beaten up in 16 hours. But how are you taking what Craig is telling you about this and then developing the world that Arnold is inhabiting and all these other kids are inhabiting? How does this come to be this dream sequence?
Well, I remember a little bit, not much, but I do remember that. No, we went through meticulously the entire pilot and talked about it and how he wanted, and he gave me a lot of rough designs and concepts and things to work with. But when it came to the dream sequence, I pretty much went on my own. Like I remember going off, which is why, you know, he had that comment. Oh, yeah. Like this isn't a city, you know, I just kind of went off. And I was always a big fan of Mary Blair and, you know, flatter, UPA style artwork. So I kind of incorporated some of that in the dream sequence just because that's what I love to do. And yeah, he did love it, but it was not directed by him at that time. Like, I remember I had a lot of leeway. I could really kind of go off and do what I wanted. I still kept it within the style, you know, the painting style and using colored pencils and the way we did the line art. But I drew it differently. I wanted it to be a dream, you know, something very different.
Now, when you're working in particular, do you listen to music or are you watching something? Is something on the background white noise, or do you like just peace and quiet when you work?
Oh no, I love music. That's a hard question to answer, but it's not a generic answer. Mm-hmm. When I'm a supervisor on a TV series like Rick and Morty or The Simpsons or Rocco's Modern Life or any of those shows, I have so much responsibility and stress, and it's like we're churning work out so fast. Mm-hmm. I do not listen to anything or watch anything, or there's just time. I can't think or organize. But if I'm painting or drawing, just, and that's it, and I've got that time, you know, to just paint and draw. Yeah. Music. I like some series, you know, I'll listen to some fun series. I like comedy. Anything that gets me going. I like punk rock, old punk rock. I like some rap. You know, anything that gets you like going, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Gets you motivated.
Yeah. It gets you kind of thinking differently and I can do what I want, you know.
There's no chains holding me back.
Right.
You know, with that.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
With that being said, like I said, this is 30 fucking years ago, so I know this is a hard question to answer.
It is a long time ago.
Do you know what you might have been listening to kind of like influence or you know, open up those channels to do something funky like that dream sequence?
I do remember I would listen to old punk and I really loved old punk. Yeah, it was because I was like an 80s clubber back in the day. So I loved all the punk rock that came out in the 80s and then just basic 80s music. But I can't remember in the 90s what I was listening to. I just kind of loved all music. I would listen to anything. I never really liked pop. I was never a pop person.
I don't blame you. It's not fun.
Yeah.
There's a couple of them that are okay, but for the most part, it's just not for me.
As I get older, I get into it a little more, but yeah, I was a rebel. I liked anything underground or different. Yeah.
That seems so, man, it's like animation is so vast, right? There's so many of you guys, but there's really not. And when you think about it, it's a very small community. But there's so many shows, you know, that I loved growing up or I loved when I was growing up watching, and all of them kind of start with punk rock. I mean, you guys were like the skateboarders, right? You guys were like the anti-establishment, essentially. You're like, I don't really want to go with the flow. I want to do this whole thing over here. And there was this show. You probably know a lot of the guys and gals that worked on it, but Ed, Edd n Eddy for Cartoon Network, Danny Antonucci show, all of them like were punk rock. He was like, they would have this one massive stereo system and it was just blaring punk rock the entire time, and everybody fit that mold. Like, we felt like we were them. We felt like we were the rock stars, you know. So it's really cool kind of hearing that sentiment echoed through another show.
Well, I worked on a lot of music videos back then, and one of the first music videos I worked on was a Beastie Boys video with Shadrach. So
which one?
That was Shadrach.
Oh, okay.
It's all hand painted. And and so that was amazing, you know. But we were kind of underground because I started at Klasky Chupo, and I started before that, but most of my work that kind of took me places was at Klasky Chupo, and Gabor really gave me a lot. You know, he just kind of turned a lot of things over to me to do, and he gave me so many opportunities. But they were known for that. They were known for cutting edge animation and doing things differently.
This might be, I've almost got 200 episodes recorded of this podcast. That might be the first time I've ever heard anybody bring up the Beastie Boys. I'm a huge Beastie Boys fan. Paul Revere, favorite song of all time with the Beastie Boys. Licensed Ill, one of the greatest albums. That's a Mount Rushmore album.
One of the best ever.
Oh, dude, it's so good. They were so ahead of their time. Fuck, that just completely derailed me. I was just, I guess I'm a huge, huge Beast
Oh,
fan. I don't even know
I
where I was
felt
going.
so lucky to be working on it. Yeah, and
Yeah.
then they came to meet us, and that was really cool.
Oh,
Yeah,
fuck, man.
I
You've
know.
had a, I don't have to tell you this, you've had a cool fucking career, Carol. You know that?
I do. No, it's good to hear it. I need to
Yeah.
keep hearing. Yeah, oh
Oh.
yeah. I need to hear that occasionally.
So, yeah, it's just getting to go down like just memory lane for Arnold. But, ladies and gentlemen, go and just look at this lady's resume. I mean, it is fantastic. I told you, man, it was just the queen of pilots essentially for the first little while. I mean, you worked on every, I mean, I've got almost every show you worked on up here. You know, we talked about the mural behind me. I mean, it's
Yeah.
fascinating to know that such an integral part, that pilot of a series, I mean, you got to put your hands all over, you got to put your work all over. So, I mean, that's pretty cool. You know, with that being said, the last couple of questions here, I mean, I would love to know, like, we talked Craig, we talked Steve, excuse me, we talked some Steve and then we talked some Tuck. But is there anything in particular that you might have taken from Craig or taken from Tuck that you still use in your career now, whether if it was like looking at a shot, how to kind of convey what somebody's asking for, maybe hell, it was even just some colors from that dream sequence. Was there anything that you still use today that you did in the pilot?
That's a great question. I mean, you get something from every person you work with. So you learn from everybody. With Craig, I think because it was kind of a friendly environment because we were friends, you know, it was a little different than having like a boss, you know, that. It was just nice to work with someone who was positive. He was very positive and he was very kind. But I worked with a few people like that, like Everett Peck also. And but Craig was really just he would nurture your creativity. So he put a lot of trust in me. And even though, you know, he'd make a comment here and there, it didn't bother me at all because most, I'd say 80% of the time, it was like this positive, oh, I like that's a good idea. Oh, you know, he was just, but he kind of taught me that. And numerous people taught me that as I worked with really kind people. But I use that as a supervisor. I try to remember to be kind and supportive and encouraging, you
Yeah.
know, even if you're not sure about someone's idea, instead of like slamming it or shutting it down, just kind of going,
Nurture.
huh, let's try and see it from their point of view, trying to understand other people's point of view.
That's a great, excuse me, that's a great way to look at it. I mean, good ideas can come from anywhere, ladies and gentlemen.
Yep.
You know, sometimes you just got to nurture it. You know what I mean? Sometimes you just got to give that flower a little bit more water to see what kind of happens to it.
Well, yeah, because sometimes I just want to say this really quickly, because sometimes your idea of what something should look like or be is your idea. It doesn't mean it's right and it doesn't mean it's wrong. And so someone else's idea isn't necessarily right or wrong. It's just another idea. And it because sometimes you'll get so in your head that you're thinking, well, that's not right. But then you're like, wait a minute, it works fine. What they're doing is great. They're doing a great job and it works great. So why am I so hung up on this right and wrong? So yeah, it's really important to let people have their freedom and encourage that.
Absolutely. Very well put. And the last question here, like I said, I love backgrounds. I love you guys that work on them because it's just so fun seeing the world you guys build. This kind of whole started with you know, a comic book I used to read. It's over now, but it's called Chew. And it's it was an IDW book, excuse me, an Image book. And this like began my looking in the background for anything, whether I was reading it, watching it, excuse me. Watching it on TV, it like there was just this one panel of this little kid. They go into this liquor store or this convenience store, and then there are two cops, and the cop is just being a dick to this kid. The kid's like 16 years old, pisses him off, you know. And then the two cops walk outside, and you see in the panel, you see the kid going like this to the one cop, and I was like, oh. And then every other panel, like it would force me to look in the back. It's like, oh, they hit a funny little sign here. And then on the podcast, I started bringing this up when I had. Did you know Brad Abelson by chance?
Oh yeah, love Brad.
So, Brad, he's one of the bros. I got to have him on here, and we just got to like completely drop all. This is right before Minions. Was it Minions that he did? Mendes, that he co-directed, which he I probably should have cut out half the stuff. He's like, nah, fuck it, I'm good with all of it. I'm like, I can't get fired.
No, Brad has no regrets. He's like, all out there on the table.
Yeah, he, like I said, he's just one of the bros, man. We're just sitting there kicking it, talking shit. And he has like one of my favorite stories. He was talking about early on in The Simpsons. I was like, hey, do you get to hide anything? Because he was just talking about, he was like, yeah, I was just handed all this crowd work or these like collective scenes. And it was like this episode where Bart was on the claw machine. So he's like, I had to draw some shit in the claw machine. I don't know what you're going to draw. So he drew a wiener in the claw machine. And I guess it made it all the way over to Korea. And then they it didn't make it to the animation stage, but the guys over there that were getting ready to animate it was I think somebody drew a wiener, and it came back to Brad, and then Mark Kirkland had to kind of save his ass at the end of it. But did the whole reason I tell you that story, was there anything that Carol tried to hide? Not obviously not a wiener, but did you try to hide anything in the background on any of your shots? It doesn't have to be Hey Arnold specific, but anything in particular?
We're always doing that.
Yeah. That's your favorite thing you've hidden?
I can't even remember. I mean, you'll write out little jokes and stuff. I think one of the things that, I don't know, I was working at Ralph Bakshi's with Rich Moore way back a long time ago. And on Houndtown, it was like a special that Rich directed. And I was doing some backgrounds and painting as well. And he said, put fuck in there. And I was like, well, how do I do it? I go, I know. I learned this on another, like, I'll write puck, but I'll make it look like fuck, but it'll say puck. Technically it can be aired. And, you know, so we left that in there. But there are always things that we're doing. And then we're constantly, I mean, on Simpsons and now on Rick and Morty, because it's a long series, we're always adding Easter eggs. There are so many things, and then we're always adding jokes. A lot of times the writers want to write their own jokes and put those in the background. So once they catch on that we're doing it, then they'll want to do it. And then sometimes they prohibit us from doing it. And that's kind of a bummer, because it's like we had fun doing those for a while. But we get them in occasionally here and there.
So ladies and gentlemen, keep looking in the background, see if you can spot anything.
And not just backgrounds, t-shirts, characters, t-shirt, you know, people and crowds. You never know what you're going to find.
So this will be the last question. So sticking on this hiding stuff in the background, with you being a supervisor, you know, for how long now? Last 10, 12 years, give or take?
Maybe 11... even a little bit longer? I've been color supervisor on Rick and Morty for the last 10 years, I guess. But yeah. I started out as a painter. Yeah.
So with that being said, obviously you're having to sign off on some stuff, so it goes to the next stage of animation. So have you ever caught anything and goes, ha, I'm gonna leave that in to see how far it gets?
It depends on, you know, I have 37 years in this business, so now I kind of know instinctually what will fly and what won't fly. But it's kind of, unfortunately, because I'm a supervisor, it's my head. So I do have to flag things if I find things that might, you know, cause a lawsuit or something down the road. I'm in touch with legal. We send things back to legal often. Unfortunately, I have to be that person now. You know, I'm like the tattler.
So. Yeah.
But some things I know can go through, and I let those go through. Like the writers won't like this if they hear this podcast, but I love all our writers. We have a great relationship. They're a lot of fun, but they really don't want us doing things without them giving their permission for like certain jokes or whatever. We still get a few in here and there, and the writers don't catch them, so we let them go. As long as it's nothing.
Keep up the fight.
Yeah, you gotta. It's just creativity, you know.
It's that punk rock making a resurface, you know what I mean?
It is. You gotta be a little punk rock.
You got to break the mold. You got to break the establishment here. Well, Carol,
Always.
like I said, this has been a lot of fun. You know, I'd love to have you back on down the road whenever you got whenever you got some free time. Like I know you're real busy right now, but this is a blast getting to hear a lot more about Craig, the best part of that pilot dream sequence. Nothing wrong with that whatsoever. And like I said, Arnold had the coolest room growing up. Everybody wanted Arnold's room, even today.
I wanted his room.
Yeah. The only thing I didn't like, especially just being in Florida, I know how hot it is. And those windows up above.
Oh, my gosh.
Jesus Christ. That would have been the hottest room in the
world.
But
it was the coolest thing. He had like a view. So his bed. I remember when Craig and I were designing that, and Craig kind of did the basic design of the room, and he wanted to make sure it had like a, you know, a glass ceiling. And so I just started adding everything else in, and we made that look like a certain, you know, specific. He's from the Northwest, so it kind of has that Northwest feel. And but yeah, I it was so cool. It was just so cool that because he could lie there at night and look through the window, and it was just it matched his personality, you know, the way he was, the way he thought about things. And and then Craig said, you know, we put a couch next to the wall. He goes, I kind of want that to come out of the wall.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. That's cool. Let's do that. So, you know, we put the couch inside and then it would fold out. And it was kind of this 50s couch, you know, everything had to have this kitsch vibe because that's what I was doing. But yeah, it was just cool. You know, but cartoons aren't real.
No, they're not. I mean, that I believe, I don't know if it's real or not, because I saw somebody advertising for it. But a lot of these hotels and these Airbnbs, they're decorating stuff like Arnold's room and any other thing else. You can go on Airbnb in the Ninja Turtle sewer, essentially. They build a room that looks like the Ninja Turtle sewer. There's so many of these. I'll see if I can't find it and I'll email it over to you. But I believe there's one out there where they redid Arnold's room. And before we let you go, did you come up with the Arnold potato clock? I can't remember if I've asked Craig that question or not.
You know, I can't remember.
I don't think it's in the pilot, but I don't know if that was something that would have bounced around at that time.
I don't remember that. I remember other things, like an Etch-a-Sketch, and there's all this stuff we put on a shelf, but I can't remember. And we put some things under his bed. I put some like socks and stuff on the floor. He has like a sock, and I can't believe I'm remembering this. This is crazy. It's all coming back to me. But yeah,
you'll be thinking about it for a couple of days after this. That's usually what happens. Like, shit, I did that too.
Yeah, I did a lot. I sometimes forget how much.
Well, that's what my job is here for, is to make sure you guys never forget. And make sure the people out there watching never forget the folks that brought us a piece of their childhood. Well, like I said, Carol, this has been a lot of fun. I can't wait to do it again. She's been Carol. I've been Julian. It's been the What's in My Head podcast. And this has been another piece of your childhood. Good night.
Hey, guys. It's your resident cartoon junkie, Brandon Jones, here asking you to have a listen to my Animation Destination podcast. It's an animation celebration podcast, and it's full of all sorts of stuff about anime and cartoons and voice acting and all that sort of thing, and just a really all-around celebration of anything animated. So come on by and check it out. We've got fan episodes of your favorite animes to your most obscure cartoons on Netflix that no one's ever heard of, and just really love talking about it. You can subscribe to us on Spotify and iTunes and anywhere else you can get your podcasts from. So stop on by, subscribe, and stay tuned for the Animation Destination Podcast.
Hey guys, thanks for listening. Before we go, thank you so much for spending a little bit of time with the podcast today. I truly appreciate every download and listen we get. If you're liking what we're doing, drop us a 5-star rating, drop us a review, tell a friend, and I'll see you next week.